podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap live on a Friday afternoon. It is a pleasure. It's Paul Cope, it's Dan Morgan, and it's Cam Rimmer with me. Across the board, we've got a lot going on this tour live. Coming up, we've got Chris Maguire and Matty Lyon. And in there as well, we've got Claire Stanacliffe. They are to come talking about trying to raise some funds for very, very different but equally worthy projects. That is to come. I did both of those interviews this week. A pleasure to do them. But we will start off with Cam and with Dan and with Paul. And we'll go to Paul first and foremost. And manager's press conference always sort of grabs you a little bit. And he was obviously going to be asked about the Mo Salah tweet. I mean, my favourite thing about the Mo Salah tweet is he decided to go grayscale just to really communicate the seriousness of the enterprise. Grayscale. Was what he decided to do. The manager says, you know, it's really interesting. Can I plead with you not to do headlines? Is one way to approach the topic in quite a disarming way. I think we'll find out if it does headlines. I think this is it's the reality of the Europa League. You know, none of us want to be in it. We all know where we think we should be. But if you're in something, I'm not saying pick your first 11 for all six group games. I'm very much not saying that. But what I'm saying is if you're in something, we're not. You know, we shouldn't have the arrogance. We should have the humility to say if we're in it, we're in it because we deserve to be there. And if we deserve to be there, we deserve to give it our best shot. And that, for me, is the beginning, middle, and end of the matter.
Yeah. First things first, I think we need to start at this point starting to worry about Jürgen with his press conferences and reaction to the press and his absolute fear of headlines. The number of times he says that during a season.
It's really funny.
Please don't make a headline of what he said. And I feel like some of the journalists should just go to him, mate, that's the whole point of this enterprise. The whole point of us being here is to get you to say something we can put in a headline. And I know you hate it. And I know you hate all of us. I know you hate this part of your job. But that's just the way it is. And maybe we should all accept it. Do you like a bit of letting go over the summer? And
yeah, no one's picking up to the editor after 1 p.m. on a Friday. Yeah. Everyone's ghosting the editors. There's no contact at all.
Yeah,
the line from Jürgen.
Don't know.
Yeah. He said. Listen. He said to keep it under.
But look, the other thing I did like about what he said was, which basically, he basically just summed up what Twitter is, which is like, yeah, that's just what Mo thought the second he sent that tweet. I saw him the next day. He seemed all right. He was smiling. So let's not get too hung up on what Mo Salah said the second he sent one tweet. And on the whole Europa League thing. I mean, why wouldn't we just be saying, let's win it? If I'm one of the lads in the squad who's won everything there is to win, I'm saying, let's add that to my little collection, shall we? Let's complete the collection. And we've seen what's happened with other clubs in those competitions, this Europa one and the other one, whatever that is. Like, it's not that hard, the reality is. Especially when you're a team like Liverpool and you've done the Champions League year in, year out, this whole Thursday, Sunday business and all that, just get that out of your heads. Let's not go into the season doing the whole, it makes a big difference playing Thursday, Sunday. Don't worry about it. Just go pick a team, and we're going to do this later, but you use this competition to make sure all the lads in your squad that aren't getting games otherwise are getting loads of games. Like, literally mentioned Carvalho at the end of the thing. I'm saying to Fabio Carvalho, lad, you're not going on loan. You're going to win the Europa League for us. How about that for yourself for next season? And then use that whole season as a platform for the year after.
I think the humility point, I think, matters, Cam. It's in Salah's tweet/Instagram posting. / whatever, it is about sort of, you know, we haven't been up to it and it's unacceptable. You know, I'd almost rather not dwell on the negative of that, not just from some sort of point of view of not really wanting to dwell on the negatives, but more from the idea of being able to say, well, okay, that's that done. This is where we are. The job now is to make the best fist of it that's possible. I don't think it's at the group stage should be relatively straightforward, but you can get difficult teams in the knockouts. You know, third place Champions League teams drop down. You know, there's enough quality in there, full stop. It won't be a stroll to win it. You're going to have to work hard to win it, but now it's something that we can win. And for me, that's the humility point here. That's what I want from Liverpool. I don't want a Liverpool football club that everything's just too big for its boots. It's got the boots that it's got, and it's got to make the best of it.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's all on us. It's not like we've fell short. It's all our doing, why where we are. So this is it, sort of thing, isn't it? So for me, it's next season, the Europa League, as you said, shouldn't be on Salah's radar until after Christmas, if we're being honest. If the draw goes our side, it should not be on his radar. He can concentrate on the league and he can just have a cup final every week in the league for me, for all I care, and just play in the league and just go for that. But as for the tweet itself, I don't know why everyone's so surprised, because he's known for it. Like, remember in lockdown, he was like, we're champions, we should not be doing this. Last season, he basically called the quadruple. He called the quadruple in about September. So it's like, do you know what I mean? So he's prone to a tweet like this. And I think I can see why a lot of people are being a bit like, oh God, Sammy, he's getting off. I don't think he will. I think we'll probably get...
That didn't even occur to me, to be honest with you.
It did on my timeline, I'm not going to lie. I've seen a few who were saying, oh, like, this is it, sort of things. Like, come on, let's not be getting all reaction over this. But yeah, no, I think as I said, it's not on his radar until after Christmas, and then he can just come in at the end and scoop up a winner's medal, hopefully.
Just very quickly, Toby Lerone there in the comments, is my wardrobe just spring summer? Colour all year round. Toby, honestly, I've just been outside on the front there by the canal basin and with the river in front of me with the sunshine, and I was meant to go home tonight and be a reasonable young man, and as it is, I think I'm out till four. So I'm dressed for it at least, and we'll go from there. Dan, we'll on that, and on that sort of wider point, on the Europa League strategy, you know, for me it just seems crystal clear, which is that you might have a second seed. We'll be number one seed. You might have a second seed or a good side, and home and away you might go really quite strong, especially if the weekend game that follows. But what I think it is a genuine positive for, and I do really mean it is a positive, I'd much rather be in the Champions League, but this is still a positive, is, you know, there's six or seven footballers I think who will be in Liverpool's squad next season who, as has been said, will really benefit from feeling as though they've got a pretty guaranteed six games of Europa League football, group game football lined up for them. And then if we need them, which we will do over the course of the campaign, if and when we need them, when we get into December, when you get into January, when the games come thick and fast, knowing we can call upon those footballers and knowing that they know the ropes and the system that they've improved, I think is going to be invaluable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was only last season that we were talking about Liverpool having the best 25-man squad in the league, and that was proven out. You know, when you get to the final stages of all four competitions that you enter, it shows that, you know, you've had to have depth there. You know, Takumi Minamino steps up a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Last season for Liverpool in games that they need him, and I think they're gonna have to find that niche, that sweet spot again with certain players in the squad. I'm not quite sure whether that's already there in many senses. I think it will be for a player like Harvey Elliott. I think, you know, I think there might have been a suggestion of a conversation to be had around someone like Elliot and the development at the end of the season. But this competition, I'd say, does provide a bit more of a pathway for players who are in his sort of space. And you can probably reel off about five or six of them if you do drill down into Liverpool's squad. I think in general, Neil, I think it does feel like the end of something and the beginning of something else. And I think being in the Europa League only adds to that. You know, I think there's a real solid question about where we place our expectancy going into next season. And a lot of that will be defined by, you know, what Liverpool do in the transfer market and the players they bring in and the sort of shape of them and the look of them going into next season. But as a side that's got 90 plus points three out of four seasons, and then they have the season that they just have, I don't know where to place my expectation of them. You know, I don't know whether to expect to be up for a title challenge and a 90-plus point season again, or whether or not, you know, I'm back to the 16-17 version of ourselves that, you know, is all about just being in and around fourth place. I did a piece of work recently on a show I'm preparing for, and the game in question that I was looking at was Southampton at home in 16-17. And we were all a bag of rags after that. You know, we were an absolute bag of rags. Liverpool had two games to play. They have 4 points on Man United. They needed to basically win the last two games to essentially qualify for the Champions League. And it was the biggest thing in our entire lives. There was nothing bigger. And I just, you know, I think we can get back to that state. And I don't really want us to. I want us to be at the top challenging with Man City. But, you know, where our eggs are placed, in what basket is really interesting, as much as interesting as anything else.
Well, the links part of this, Paul, the links have been coming all week. McAllister and Mount, the week started, McAllister being strongly linked with Manchester City, although that then goes really, really quiet. The week's ended with Mount being strongly linked with Manchester United. That appears to be ongoing, but you can't tell with this sort of thing. One of the problems, Liverpool are now very firmly, and I think we may be a bit not used to it, you know, everyone knows, and the manager's talking about the fact that he's doing business. And last few years, when the manager said, we're not doing any business, we're not doing this, we're not doing this, we're not doing this, you've sort of been able to go, no, we're not going to get embroiled in that sort of thing. Our reality now is that that's where we are. We are embroiled in it, in the way that United are embroiled in it every single summer, the way in which Chelsea don't just get embroiled in it, but they welcome it seemingly. They want it in their lives, the Chelsea hierarchy. Liverpool now, any player who's looks of Champions League class, especially one who plays in the middle of the park, is going to find himself linked with Liverpool, and we've got to work out what's plausible and what isn't, and the other noises that are made as well.
Yeah, I would very much like to think, and time will obviously tell with this, that it's all just irrelevant, and the lads are all pretty much done. And it's just a case of when we announce them, and we'll just see us. I'd really like to see, I think I always get my ears mixed up, but I think it was Kiev when we lost, and then the next day announced Fabinho.
Yeah, it was.
Like, we're literally on our way home. We're like, oh, we've just signed this boss lad. I would very much like that they've done that this season, especially with what's gone on with the whole Bellingham shenanigans. I would like to think that FSG know that we could do with a bit of a boost. Joe, announced too early on to get everyone happy, get everyone going into the summer bouncing, and start the ball roll with it, Joe. If you've got others that you're worried about getting over the line, it always takes me back to do stories about when City first had their money and they were doing their chief exec at the time. What was his name?
Gary Cook
doing the diddle on all the different players, saying we've signed Aguero's coming to David Silva, and saying to Aguero, David Silva's coming. At least once you've announced a couple of players, you can say to others, look, we're serious here. We're not messing around. Don't worry about us. We are going back to what Dan said. That's a really big point for talking to players, because players will be thinking the same thing. What's Liverpool next year? Is Liverpool next year 90 plus points again? Or is Liverpool fighting for fourth place? And you've got to be able to convince. There'll be a couple of people in there, I'm sure. You've got to be able to convince that we are going to be back. So that's really important. As for who it is, I think the problem we've all got now, I think we've all been shaken a little bit, haven't we, from they had a little sweet spot for a few years. Our whole support of life, support of Liverpool, I suppose in very recent years up until this sweet period I'm about to talk about, we didn't trust them one bit. Transfer committees debated endlessly online and on shows and in the media, and buying players that didn't fit and all that. And then we've had this run where we've all...
Rafa Benitez, Gareth Barry, Robbie Keane.
Yeah, all of that. And then into the Rodgers era, do you know what I mean? And you lose Suarez, you buy Balotelli. All this nonsense. And then we had this a few years where they've just got our trust. Like Liverpool fans all of a sudden, almost unanimously, were like, well, we just trust whatever they're going to do. And I think that's been shaken quite a bit recently. So they need to earn that back and win that back. And I think acting quickly and getting a couple of really solid signings in would help.
Acting quickly, I think it'd be a big deal, Cam. I suspect they might want to. The issue they've got is that, you know, I use Brighton and McAllister as an example. Unless McAllister is very, very explicit with Brighton, he's only going to one place, then you're in a situation where, well, if you're Brighton, it's sort of not in your interest to act that quickly, maybe a little bit quickly, but not, you know, not the idea of it happening tomorrow. I think it's, there's someone in the comments there that said they need about a 300 million spend on the squad if we have a chance of competing or even top four. I mean, that sort of stuff, I think, just sort of overstates the case. We've just come, effectively, we're going to finish about 3 points off top four. So I don't think it's, you know, to break 70 points, I don't think we need a 300 million spend, but I don't care about that. I just care solely about competing, Cam, at the very highest level. And I take both Dan and Paul's point about, you know, what is this, but Mo Salah's tweet, Jurgen Klopp's contract, Virgil van Dijk's age, Salah's age, you know, Alisson's age. I feel as though the idea of being linked with Premier League based players, to me, it all suggests Liverpool want to just hit the ground running. They just want to hit the ground running, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, but also it's, you know, when the Bellingham stuff, I mean, don't even know if that's finished or not, the whole thing around that was basically, in looking at it from what I've seen, it's like Klopp is thinking this is going to go right till the very end of the summer. I just want to have my business done early. So now it's looking at players that you can do. But then again, it's, you know, is it a coincidence that the week that we officially can't get top four, other teams are now in for all, you know, these like McAllisters and Mounts and stuff. It's all a bit, I think, with these players holding on to see what we're doing. And if they are, like, they're not the sort of players you want to be coming anyway, because you want players to be buying into this, you know, buying into this new project where it is now. So yeah, I want it being We need as quick as possible. I mean, as someone just said in the comments there, you want it where they just announce them with like the away kit and the third kit, just out of nowhere in the, you know, in the main stands, and it's just done like that. Because Klopp will want to be working with these players as soon as possible, because really, we really don't have the time to be going into next season still planning. You literally need it for the first day of pre-season training.
Yeah, the amount of spend that's been asked to get in the comments, Dan, for me, it's a bit of a misnomer. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's going to be influenced by also your sales in amongst that as well. You know, you've got to have a cash flow thing. But I think the other part of this is, I want, you know, in my head, it's five quality numbers. Five quality footballers, of whom two and a half of them are midfielders. That's what I want to see them do, you know, and top quality players. And I'm not going to sort of think, if Liverpool get a bargain, something's gone wrong. Similarly, I'm not going to necessarily think, oh my God, if Liverpool are overspending, something's not quite right. I'm just all about, I'd love them to add five quality footballers, of whom two and a half are midfielders.
Yeah, the price is never the price, is it? I suspect one of the reasons that they're so in for McAllister is because they're quite confident they can get the deal done with not a lot being paid up front. And, you know, that's how they've structured deals in the past, and I'm sure it's how they'll do it now. And, you know, that's the top line with this, that, you know, whatever Liverpool are rumoured to have paid for someone almost indefinitely won't be that straight away. So, you know, it is a balancing act in that sense. And Liverpool will have to be defined by, ultimately, you know, the sort of player they feel they can get, but also, you know, the type of player that now wants to come and play for Liverpool. And, you know, I think there's been quite rightly a lot made of the Mason Mount thing this week, and a couple of other links that seemingly are now being defined by, oh, player X wants Champions League football, or player X might think he can get more wages. Well, you know, I think that's more on the player than the club themselves. Liverpool should always have enough credit in the bank, in a lot of senses. You know, this isn't Alexis Sanchez, you know, doesn't want to move to Liverpool chat all over again. It's the fact that Liverpool is Liverpool, and Liverpool's a side that out of four of the past 5 years have competed for every single honour. So they've still got one of the top three managers in the world there. They've got, you know, a real sort of admirable setup, I'd say, across the board in terms of facilities. I think the squad looks healthy enough. If I was a player like McAllister, you know, or of his ilk, I'd be saying, yeah, you know, get me there. I really want to be part of that project, those supporters, etc., so on. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, we need to feel like, I talked about the end of something and the beginning of something else, for it to feel like a true beginning next season. I really feel like, you know, we need to see a real different look to the squad. We need it to feel invigorated. We need it to feel fresh. We need players who are doing the first pre-season with this manager and, you know, and thinking, oh my God, you know, I've never been asked to run this much in my life. You know, what's this? Because, you know, ultimately we've ran a lot of players in every sense, you know, but literally and metaphorically. And we've ran a squad up until the point we couldn't do any more. And maybe we should have, you know, maybe we should have started disbanding that a little bit more, a little bit earlier. But this is a new look Liverpool, and to be a new look Liverpool, it needs new players ultimately. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing who that is, like everyone else is.
All right then. It is Tour Live. I've got Cam, I've got Paul, and I've got Dan. Coming up, I've got Chris Maguire and Mary Lyon. Mary is the chairwoman of the Association for Children Damaged by Hormone Pregnancy Tests. Chris is part of that association. He is also an Anfield Rap contributor. You've also heard him he does the Golden Samba as well. I've got him talking about that. And in addition to that, I have also got Claire Stanicliffe, who's from the England Deaf Women's Football Team. They are coming up for you right now. Joined by Mary Lyon from the Association of Children Damaged by Hormone Pregnancy Tests, and Chris Maguire, who's a big supporter of the aforementioned. But Chris is also the man behind the Golden Samba, which you will have seen get much discussion and traction last week because Roberto Firmino and James Milner were involved. And Chris, so was your dad.
Yeah, he was loving it. He was more excited than the two kids who got to present the awards.
He put himself so front and centre, it was ridiculous. I thought he actually won the Samba.
Yeah, he was great, wasn't he? He's been there a few times, my dad, to see the presentations. He just thinks it's the funniest thing. So, he was on the pitch shaking Bobby's hands. I think he even gave him an obrigado as well, which was great. So, yeah, it was a good result. We had some great assistance from the club, to be fair. It's been a difficult couple of years for the Golden Samba with the COVID and behind closed doors, and yeah, with them reaching so many cup finals recently as well. There's been like a a problem just actually touching players or shaking hands and things like that. But obviously this season with no cup final and Bobby's leaving us and James is leaving us as well. So I decided to give it another go. So I spoke to the lads who sort of, you know, suggested, and we talk about it, and people said, oh, definitely you've got to get one for Bobby. And because normally it's just been like, well, it's Jamie Carragher and Steven Gerrard when they've retired, you've had the Legends Awards. So Bobby's sort of got that sort of, although he's not a Scouser, he's got that luster about him, hasn't he? It's like a romance with Bobby. He's got a brilliant song. And then I thought, well, if James, they've both been here for 8 years, they've both won the lot, I'll have to do one for Milner as well. Unfortunately, my budget couldn't stretch for the other two chaps who were leaving. So you can't get all the Sambas anymore. That's the problem. I've been on the Adidas website looking for them, but they're just not in stock. So you've basically got to go looking for them, and they're paying a premium price. So if anyone from Adidas wants to get in touch in the future, that would be most helpful. I thought it was a good presentation. We had some great assistance from the family liaison officer. She was great. So yeah.
Yep, excellent stuff. But Chris, that isn't all you do. You're also part of the organisation. There's a raffle that's going on. We'll come on to the raffle in a minute, but it's the an official Liverpool Champions League shirt from 2001 to 2003, autographed by 20 players. But the cause that it's being raffled for, and the cause that you're a part of, is the Association of Children Damaged by Hormone Pregnancy Tests. How did you get involved with that, Chris?
So it's about 10, 11 years ago now. I was born with a cleft lip and problems with my nose and problems with my hearing. And about 10, 11 years ago, I saw a lad on Granada Reports with similar injuries, if you like. His name was Carl Murphy, and he was from Liverpool or the Liverpool area. And he was talking about it, and he was saying, you know, his mother had took these tablets, Primidos, when she was pregnant in the 1970s. I think it was 72. Probably he's the same age as me. And my mum was watching the same Granada Reports from her house. I was in my house with my wife. My mum was in her house with my dad. And she was watching the report, and it took her back to 1972. And she said to me, Dad, I was given those tablets. And what they were, Neil, they were a pregnancy test for women who thought they might be pregnant. So they would go to their doctor and say, I think I've, you know, missed a period, I might be pregnant. What should I do next? Instead of giving them a urine test or an examination, the doctors in the late 60s and the early 70s had been given these tablets by the pharmaceutical companies, and they weren't on prescription. They were just coming out the doctor's drawer. He said, take these tablets home with you. And if you take one when you get home and take one in the morning, if you don't bleed, that means you're pregnant. So that was a quick test. So the women thought, oh, great, that's a great way of finding out if I'm pregnant or not. But unfortunately, it caused injuries to people, and it caused miscarriages to unborn children as well. And I found Carl, the lad who was affected, who was on Granada Reports, on Facebook. I just found him and thought, that's him, I could recognise him. So I sent him a message. I said, what's this about the tablets? He said, yeah. He said, we've got a charity, we've got an association, you know, we're fighting for answers, we're fighting for justice. So me and Carl went to see my then MP at the time, which was Joe Benton in Bootle. And Carl brought all the paraphernalia that his mother had about the drugs. And then that's when I joined the association. He told me that Mary was the chair of the association. So it's been a long struggle, Neil, to be honest with you. Sadly, Carl passed away last year because he had heart problems as well due to the tablets. As far as I know, I haven't got any heart problems, but there are other people in much, much worse situations than me. And they need care. They need security for the future. And their parents are all in the 70s and their 80s. Now, this tablet was took off the market about 3 years after I was born, you know, so they did know that it was a dangerous thing. So I'll pass it over to Mary now. She can.
I mean, Mary, it's an extended dark period in British medical history. This, you know, there's a great many examples. And this, you know, the organisation that you're a chair of, the Association for Children Damaged by Hormone Pregnancy Tests, this is part of that struggle and part of that fight, and you're looking to raise money at the moment, specifically in order to be able to go to the Royal Court of Justice.
We are indeed. I think the problem is that it's one of these unfortunate, but certainly avoidable medical scandals that could have been avoided, and particularly in Chris's case, because that tablet was actually taken off the market in 1970. There was a huge report published in 1967, which actually laid bare how dangerous these tablets were. The highest affected area in our organisation is Liverpool, and this is why this appeal is really important. Not only were there more women affected in Liverpool, but there was a deliberate slur on the mothers that took the tablets from someone called Dr. Richard Inman, Smithles, who worked at Alderhay Hospital. And what he said was, yes, there's an excessive amount in Liverpool, and we feel that the women in Liverpool are deliberately misleading their doctors to get these tablets to effect an abortion, which I thought was absolutely dreadful. So as well as the suffering that they were going through with their children, there was also this hanging over them, if you like, that they were taking them deliberately, which was nonsense. You know, like Chris's mum, we went to the GP in all innocence, thinking that this was a new way to find out if we were pregnant, not realising that it was 40 times the strength of an oral contraceptive. It's just unforgivable, really. And I look at it that it was avoidable harm. People like Chris, 1972, you know, with women taking them 1978, and yet they've been withdrawn by the regulator. But in his own words, what he said was without informing the public or the medical profession. So it is a scandal. It's been going on. I've been in this association since 1978. So, you know, it's just about time now we got something sorted. But I think Liverpool is a good place to start with trying to publicise this, because as a city, you do tend to embrace anyone that's been harmed, because we know that with Hillsborough. And again, if Hillsborough law was you know, in place now, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Yep. You know, the duty of candour that's within that law would make the government and the manufacturers tell the truth. So I really am so grateful that you've taken the time to highlight this today.
No problem at all. Just to go into there for what's happening at the Royal Court of Justice very, very soon indeed.
Yes.
What is it that you're looking to achieve in this action at the moment?
The first thing we want to achieve is to expose the evidence. That's the most important thing. I know everybody thinks it's redress and compensation, but quite frankly, what we need to do is to make women aware that this has happened, that there's still dangers out there from drugs that are not regulated sufficiently. And really, people, as Chris said, we've got all of our families now with children who are affected, who are increasingly becoming more and more infirm because of the long-term effects. As Chris mentioned with Carl, he actually died. We've had three of our members in the late 40s, early 50s die without doubt from the effects, the long-term effects of the mums taking these drugs. So that's the first thing that we need. And then definitely care, as Chris says, for the people who are left, for the mums, you know, many of them now, like us in 70s, 80s, who are still caring for the children. They need to have some kind of support to know that when anything happens to them, which it obviously will, their children will be looked after.
Chris, you're part in all this then, obviously, you know, I'm presuming being part of the process to get this, pull this raffle together. It is available right now. I've got the link in front of me. It is, if you go to crowdfund.co.uk/pay/a-signed-liverpool-champions-league-shirt. 2001-03. We will tweet that out on the Anfield Rap account and put it on all of our socials and
thank
support the other places in which that's happening as well. So people will be able to see that to get that. The shirt's a cracker. It is £5 for people to enter. You're looking to try to raise £10,000 from the raffle of it. The key thing is that people enter, but then also share with as many others as possible. Yes?
That would be great if people would do that. Yeah. It's been donated actually by a member of Mary's, well, by a son, actually. Yeah. So,
it was my son. It was his late father that bought it for him, but he just said he wanted it to do something useful instead of him just keeping it as a memory.
So if you listen to this, if you could first and foremost take the time to enter and see if you can win that shirt first. And then secondly, also share it amongst all your social networks in every single way. We know all where that goes on around WhatsApps and so on and so forth. Get it out there with as many people as possible and encourage them to enter as well. This is one example, as Mary sort of states here, where, you know, the title Hillsborough Law, I'm mildly concerned about, is a little bit of a misnomer. There are so many campaigning groups around the country who've had information kept from them, who've had inequality of arms to such an extent it is practically impossible for them to be able to take on the powers that be in so many different ways. We're going to be doing more on Hillsborough Law on the Anfield Wrap over the course of the summer. The most important thing to remember is that all these struggles are absolutely shared. All these struggles are absolutely equal. All are worthy of support where we can. Get on board with this raffle ticket. Thanks a lot to Mary. Thanks a lot to Chris. It's Neil Atkinson, joined by Claire Stancliffe from the England Deaf Women's Football Team, who have been looking to raise money and have finally completed that fundraising this week. But first and foremost, the money was cut from the budget for them to be able to play in the World Cup in Malaysia. And Claire, let's start with that part of the story. It must have been a massive blow to have that money cut. And, you know, let's be clear, you know, this is a side that's been going for some time. It's a good football team. And they were finally able to pull the money together recently. But how did it feel when the money was cut in the first place?
Yeah, I've played for the team for about 16 years now. And for the majority of it, we have been self-funded. So when the FA took over the team, it was so nice to just be able to just go to training and focus on the football. But unfortunately, they made the decision very recently to stop the existence of the 11-a-side deaf women's football team, which a lot of players weren't too happy with. And they approached me saying, can we go? Can we be self-funded again and give it a go? And it was kind of a bit, well, it's a lot of money to go, because Malaysia is not a cheap place to go in terms of flights and accommodation. But I kind of felt like it was my duty to at least give it a go. And that's why we decided to set up a fundraising page with an initial target of £50,000 by the end of June to pay for the accommodation and flight deposits. If we didn't raise that, we wouldn't be allowed to go. Overall, we've got a target of £100,000, so we will continue to fundraise from now on. But, you know, we're a lot more relieved that we've hit the initial target.
So they moved the money. I'm just intrigued by, you know, that process where firstly you were self-funded, then they stepped in, and then they moved the money over to the futsal, the World Deaf Futsal Championships instead. What explanation was given for that? Because obviously it's not one that a lot of the players, as you say, have accepted. What was the explanation they gave?
So it's quite confusing, really. But basically what happened was they decided that they weren't going to do 11-a-side for deaf females, deaf women, at all. So they put an offer to take over the futsal team, who were self-funded. Whether that offer was accepted or not, there was still not going to be an 11-a-side deaf women's football team. So it wasn't a case of football or futsal, it was futsal or nothing. You know, but not everyone plays futsal. It's just because you play football doesn't mean you can play futsal and vice versa. And I think the impact of our trial, like the numbers that we've had, just go to show how much it is needed.
When then, you know, you began to raise the money and push the fundraising aspect, let's be clear about this. You've raised the money this time. You've got over the £50,000 limit, and that's because of the generosity of a wide variety of people. In there, Frank Hester was donated £15,000 to get you over the target. But there were other people in the build-up to that who donated money all the way through. The important part to sort of point out here is you're now back to being self-funded. You will now have to continue that process. The fundraising efforts don't just stop because the 2023 World Cup in Malaysia will happen. It will now have to be ongoing.
Yeah, it needs to be ongoing. We potentially have the European Championship next year in Turkey as well, which will be England under the Great Britain Deaf Football banner. But there's also the Deaf Olympic 2025 in Japan, which GB will enter a team. At the moment, the government do not recognise Deaf Olympics GB or deaf athletes, and that's caused a massive problem with opening like funding for us. I think once we've got that, if we can get that, I think that will open so many doors for us. But yeah, it is a constant process that we need to keep asking for funding all the time.
So currently the government don't recognise any form of deaf sport?
No, they don't, no. So we're not seen as official athletes as such, like the Paralympians and the Olympians.
So is there lobbying in process to try and change that? Is that what is there currently a big push to try to get DCMS to rethink the official British government view?
Yeah, at the moment, UK Deaf Sport are doing a big piece of work and they are meeting with DCMS to try and change that. I think that's happening very, very soon. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we will finally have a change.
To be clear, through this process, then, you know, it doesn't take much to expect that everyone also has to have ongoing jobs and lives around the training that goes on to be part of the women's deaf football team. What, you know, for you personally, how many sacrifices have to be made on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis to be ready and able to play?
Yeah, I mean, I've probably made so many sacrifices over the last 16 years. I've lost count. But, you know, it's things like giving up friendships and relationships for football. It's also, as well, I've had to give up my annual leave to be able to go and represent the country at these competitions. At times, I've had to take unpaid leave just to go. So it's not just the cost of paying to go, but it's also what you lose out on as well. And it's also like we don't get any funding outside of England and GB either. So our club fees are in the mainstream environment. We have to source sponsorship that way as well.
When the dust settles on this, you're still looking to raise money. So to be clear, the GoFundMe still exists. It is gofundme.com/F/DSFF2023, the end there being the numbers rather than spelling it 2023 at the end. So the aim now is to be able to cover all the expenses, not just the minimum expenses, but all the expenses all the way through. The target has moved itself up to 100,000 for everyone, and obviously because the competition is in autumn. Are you still, obviously still plugging away? That's part of why you've come on to speak to me. But, you know, are you optimistic of reaching that goal at this point?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. We may have potentially a sponsor coming in. We're not quite clear on what exactly that will be yet. But we've got certain things coming up in the pipeline. So things like signed shirts, auctions, player sponsorship, just to bring in a little bit more and just to allow us to have that continuous revenue coming in or sponsorship coming in to keep the team going for as long as we can. The £100,000 literally is to cover the whole trip, but also training camps that we need to prepare and kit, because we don't have any kit whatsoever at the moment.
The last sort of part of this then is, you know, you've got the work with DCMS. Is there a message that you'd sort of like to get to the FA? I mean, I think we all appreciate that to an extent, obviously, you know, the way... It's a very strange thing to say. There's so much money in football. Let's be clear about this. There's so much money in football in this country, in men's football, increasingly in the women's game as well at a professional level. Is the, you know, the idea of being able to find a way, find a route to have smarter, stronger, quicker grassroots football and grassroots access to money feels to me as though it's, you know, it's increasingly almost a moral obligation on football. Is there a sort of a message you'd like to get to the FA? Is there a way you want the FA to fight not just your corner, but other people's corners more? What is it that you wish was different and better?
To be honest with you, you know, the FA have made the decision and we accepted that. We have to respect it. Doesn't mean we have to agree with it. At the end of the day, we have a right to compete with our country at competition, just like everybody else, just like the men's deaf team are. Maybe there's some conversations we can have after the competition. But for now, I think all our focus is on what we're doing. We're not necessarily going to prove a point. We're just doing what's right for the players.
Excellent stuff. I'll give you that link again if you do want to donate. It is gofundme.com/F/DSFF2023. We'll make sure we tweet that out as well as part of all the bits and pieces of the show. So if you go to the Anfield Wrap, you'll be able to a Twitter page, you'll be able to find it there. It's been a pleasure to speak to Claire. By the way, you're going to win the tournament.
I hope so.
Best ad, given all this.
That's what we're going there to do. So we'll have to wait and see, won't we?
We will indeed. It's been a pleasure to speak to Claire. Let's get back over.
And that's the now of it all. Thank you very much to Chris, Mary and Claire. Hopefully you've been able to support them in some way, shape or form, or just have more awareness around it. Paul, again from the manager's press conference, but it sort of knocks into the Southampton game. He talks a little bit about using different players, using fresher players. He goes out of his way to praise Carvalho. It's quite an odd little passage, and then talks about him going on loan next season, but says he's never been more impressive and he's going to have a fantastic career. Carvalho's in the category of player who might just appear in this one against Southampton. I think Harvey Elliott's a little likelier in there as well. There might be a couple of players who've not featured that much recently because, and it's been very rare for Liverpool across the last few seasons, there is quite literally nothing riding on the game against Southampton last day other than the opportunity to play a bit of football.
Yeah, Carvalho, I mean, the Carvalho thing's interesting, isn't it? Because even though I said earlier on in this very show, you should build your Europa League team against them, I also would quite happily see him sold. Because I do think there's an element of Carvalho where it's like, he's a fabulous footballer. I can imagine everyone who ever like comes near him in Liverpool behind the scenes, like, he's fabulous. And then the next thing they say is, I don't know where we play him though. Where do we play him in this side? Like with the way we're set up. And going back to your talk about signings, I was thinking before, but I thought, oh, he's probably just a little bit small. I'd be saying to I've been saying this for weeks now, months probably. When you're signing players this year, the order on your top trumps is different than it used to be. Number one has got to be reliability. You need players who are going to be fit all the time. But up towards the top of that list is the question I'd be asking everyone is, can you play fullback? Because I don't want to buy any fullbacks anymore. And I know this ties into something you've been saying for a long time. And me and you used to talk about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain for this, and I still think he's missed a trick. Still think he's missed a big trick in his career here. But going back to Carvalho, I don't think that's a trick he could do. So I think it'll be interesting to see who he decides to throw in for it. And maybe it will be a matter of like, which of the lads does he look at and think, you really want to win a game of footy? Or have you like switched off for the summer? And I think there even could be an element of, why do you want to risk people?
Because you could pick up
knocks and injuries, yeah, and think, what's the point?
So but this is my, and but also there's something else, which is the few of them are going to go and play some international football for a couple of games. And that's why, I mean, I should never do this, but whenever a manager, Cam, says X is ill, and we've just had a pandemic, so let's be clear, but whenever a manager says X is ill, there's always a bit of me going, is he though? Is he? And Konaté being ill feels very much like, you know what, at some point I might need a favour from the French manager. So this one, won't risk him last game of the season. Konaté wants to play for his country, very proud to play for his country. Send him off, let him play for his country off the basis of the fact that maybe next year in March, if we're going for all the trophies, I'm saying to the French manager, can you do us a favour and not pick Konaté for this squad? Can you not pick him for this game? Can you not play him in the second of the friendlies or the third of the friendlies or the Nations League games or whatever? Because it's one that I just feel as though you can see from space, to be honest with you. And it did get my attention immediately.
Yeah, literally agree with everything there. I always find it funny when they come out, when they always just say ill, don't they? Like, doesn't they never actually specify, well, what team? Like, I'd love it if someone, I mean, I'll stress Klopp gets in the press conference anyway, he'd probably try and swing for one of them if they said to him, well, you know, what do you mean? What's actually wrong with him? But that's just looking for next season. And then in terms of the team, you could argue that this is the first day of pre-season, really, in terms of getting lads onto the pitch and seeing, let's see what you've got in terms of next season. He might try something different, he might try different ideas, and then just, yeah, he'll be seeing, are you already on the beach yet, or Do you want to play for me next season? Because there's lads there who, obviously, with this Europa League next season, like your Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, who could easily be making plus 30 appearances, starts next season for us. And so that's for them. You know, Jones is coming on off the back of how good his form has been. He could go on there, have another brilliant 90. And then it's like, well, yeah, you've got your shirt for the start of pre-season and hopefully for the start of next season. So apart from Konaté's mystery illness, it could be literally anyone, couldn't it, really? Who's going to start and just finish the season off?
Is there anything you want to see him do, Dan? Anything you want to see him look at? What's your, you know, I've got something, which is if Robertson is out, and again, it feels a little bit like, well, Robertson's going to be playing for Scotland, what with him being the captain of Scotland. But if Robertson is out, I wouldn't mind seeing him go Gomez there.
Yeah, and
have a look at that. Is there anything else that you've got your eye on including that?
I was thinking about that. I also thought, you know, I think it's a shame that since Arsenal at home and since we've inverted Trent, if you like, you know, we haven't really seen Liverpool. Well, we haven't seen Liverpool come up against the top six side away, because I think the answer to Trent, I've seen, you know, the alternative, if you like, I've seen someone put in the comments before about Thiago, is I think Liverpool actually playing Trent at right back in games against, you know, your top six away, and using a Thiago or a Pacetic next to Fabinho like they did last season. You know, it's often forgotten, but last season there was a lot of Thiago and Fabinho as a two. And I think that's your, you know, I think that's your sort of flip for that. And he might, you know, he might look at that, something like that with Henderson. But I can't see him doing it in this game. I think, you know, the build-up in the three and the two is against the side that's already relegated. It just seems like a no-brainer. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if we end up starting four forwards. You know,
so that's the other thing I wouldn't mind seeing. So I've talked about that, at, you know, Gomez there, Dan. I'd love to see him start Gakpo where Henderson's been playing. Like, I would really like, and then three in front of him. That's what I'd like to see in this one.
Yeah, I wouldn't be against that at all. I think there's going to be loads of times next season where Liverpool do have to use that as well, and should be using it a lot more. You know, again, it's the thing of where we set our expectations. Liverpool should be able to flat track a lot next season. This season shouldn't change that at all. They should be able to take control of I'd say, you know, 80% of the games. And again, you know, it's just about what we do when we are, you know, facing, for example, the top six away. And I think that's something we're going to look at, but we haven't got either of them two players fit. That's by the by. He referenced sentiment quite a bit, and, you know, how he might maybe be susceptible to that. So that'd be interesting to see, you know, what he does there. If there is a, you know, a Bobby or a Milner or a both of them starting and, you know, just giving them the game. But, you know, you've got to sort of take it from there. Nunes is trained as well.
If he's on the pitch, and, you know, I love Mo Salah to pieces, Paul, but if he's on the pitch, Milner best be taking the pens. Like, if there's one thing we can do for this fella at this point, I want James Milner on the pens if he's on the pitch. The thing with Milner and Firmino, and I think it's the lost thing about Firmino, everyone said it's his perfect goodbye. The home game against Villa, it's Firmino's perfect goodbye. The thing I kept thinking was, he's got most of his key goals away from Anfield. You know, you literally go through his key goals and some of his key performances and his key moments. You know, he scores the opener against Leicester in 2019 when we've just come back from the World Club Cup final, where he scored the winner, where in the semi-final he scored the winner, where he was then that season going to go on and score away at Wolves, which was the winner. And earlier in that season, he scored away at Palace, which was also the winner. You know, you go through a lot of your key Firmino moments. His first Liverpool goal is away at Manchester City to make it 3-1. He gets two against Norwich City in the 5-4 at Carrow Road. You know, you go through this sort of list of what Firmino's wonderful moments. So many of them have come away rather than home, which is part of the footballer he is. And for me, it's not finished with Firmino. I want to see him get on the pitch for a period of time. I want to see Milner on the pitch for a period of time. And I expect both to have an impact, because they're both wonderful footballers who like it when it's hard.
Well, like you said as well, there's no way Firmino or Milner thinks that a perfect send-off was drawing at home. Yeah. Is there? No way in a million years. So Milner on the pitch afterwards getting into you, just like him, gutted we drew. Like, and Klopp referenced it afterwards, saying like it's hard to balance a day like that where you've got all this build-up, you know, this stuff you've planned for after the game, which you've got to do in advance. And you've got all this emotion to handle. And you want to win the game against a good side, like a side that's been in good form. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if both those lads are knocking on Klopp's door saying, I want to play and I want to win our last game. Like, when you talk about your lads who are ready to play this game, and you think about lads who want to prove themselves for next season, well, I mean, to be right up there on your list to be those two who want to play and want to put everything in to get a win.
And are also trying need to get a contract. Neither of them are packing in football. Neither of them are retiring.
Precisely. So
they want to show something there. We'll want to be all over it. Nunes as well, Cam, mentioned by the manager, he's in training. Be quite nice to see him. He gets a brace against Southampton earlier in the season in the home game.
Yeah, this sort of game where it's, you know, if he comes on and scores, like, you know, if he gets a hat-trick, it's not going to be like, right, that's it, we're sorted for next season. But it gives you something to build on for next season a bit, doesn't it? So it's a big one, because for Nunes, because kind of like came in with all of this hype and stuff, and since the turn of the year when pear shapes, but then Gakpo coming into his own, he's kind of just been left out a bit, hasn't he, really? So it's, yeah, I'd be looking to hopefully start him. Not sure how bad the injury was, but or at least get some sort of action, like just get a goal to just round off which has been an all right debut season.
There's also another couple of footballers where we might not know, Dan, where there's a chance it could be the last Liverpool game. It could be Joel Matip's last Liverpool game if he comes in for Konate. I still think that the manager last week was dangling the carrot of there's a fee for which you can get Kelleher. None of you have offered it yet. That's something that's there or thereabouts. Shimakas in tears last week. You know, if he gets on in this one, it could be his last Liverpool appearance. There may be a surprise somewhere along the line. I think that's a part of this, isn't it? You know, that some of these footballers who we've been on the journey with, I think Matip being the number one example of one you've had all the love for an extended period. This could be it. This could be his last game.
Yeah, but I also think there's a possibility that, you know, a few people woke up on Friday morning with the realisation that they're maybe not getting a move even if they want one, because their players we're going to need next season for the Europa League. You know, we can't leave ourselves with too much work to do.
Yeah.
You get rid of two of them three. Yeah, I think Keller has his own case. You know, I think he's a player who probably needs to develop by moving and being a first for someone. So, you know, I could see a world in where he goes and Liverpool maybe insert a buyback and maybe look to use that if, you know, his development is exponential in that sense. But I think the other players, I think Liverpool are going to need them given the competition they're in, certainly for the first 6 months. You know, maybe you could see one or two of them going in January if Liverpool get past the group stages in the Europa League. And then, you know, I think, like I said, the other thing with that is that you don't want to leave yourself with too much to do because who you're replacing them with when you've already got, like we said earlier, five players to sign.
There we are. I'm going to ask you if we're going to beat Southampton. I don't know. I'm going to ask you what you think is going to happen to the Blue Brethren. I think you can underestimate the power of Goodison Park at your peril. I think if ever need to win a home game, last game of the season, certainly against a side who are bottom half, they'll find a way to do it. That's my analysis. Paul, who goes down?
I think Brighton let us all down, let themselves down, let their families down.
Let the nation down. Let the nation down, Paul.
Yeah, they ruined the Everton for all of us. I'm glad we're going into the last game. After that, I'm glad we're going into the last game with hope. But realistically, not much. I think, I don't know, I haven't been following the news. I was going to keep it as a surprise for yourself, but I'll ask, is Calvert-Lewin fit?
No. Unlikely.
Okay, so that is the big thing, I think. And going back to something Dan said before, he referenced Klopp as being one of the top three managers in the world. And I assume he meant the third one being Big Sam. So you never know. The reality is, they've all got winnable games, haven't they? But the reality is down at that end of the table, they shouldn't all win. So you just never know with a game like that. Because what you were saying about Goodison, yes, it could be. We know what a ground like that can be like. It can be brilliant. And if they get ahead early on and they're doing well, yeah, it could just be, they could have it done, all done and dusted in the first half an hour. But if it gets a bit nervous and if things start going a bit wrong and, you know, Neil Morpay's playing up front for them, there is still a chance, but I would say the bookies very rarely get things badly wrong, don't they? And the odds on them staying up are good now. So I think they'll stay up.
Cam, will they stay up?
They're going to go down and our ends will be better than Madrid and Istanbul.
Dan Morgan, are they going to stay up?
What's been really interesting is, you know, we've been used to like February onwards where winning every game is the only thing that's required. And you sort of have a little bit of vested interest in this because it's them. And from February onwards, basically the whole season, it's a situation where no one wins. So it's like, you know, it is the fact that I think they'll stay up, but they'll stay up because Leeds and Leicester are absolutely atrocious. That's and don't look like they've got a win in them from anywhere. Like I wouldn't bet anything on either of those two winning. I don't think Leeds will win at all. And I probably don't think Leicester will win.
Me and you were watching Leeds second half against West Ham, and we, God,
it was, yeah. But I think, look, I'm not interested in Everton essentially, but if I've got a bit of interest in what happens with them on Sunday, I'm just intrigued by what the reaction will be at full time, because I think there'll be a bit of adulation that they've stayed up, but that they can't, you know, they can't stay happy about that for that long. And I'm talking, you know, within the first half an hour of that being confirmed, because it's atrocious for two seasons on the bounce now, and it shows no sign of getting better for them. And frankly, you know, it remains unacceptable. So I think there's a good chance that it does still turn to anger, even if they do it, which I think they will.
No, I go on.
So I just wanted to throw into that, when you mentioned Sam at the end of the Leeds game, so he's carrying on something which I've seen as a theme this year with a few managers, which I love and hope carries on to next season, which is managers coming out, and once they realise they can't do anything that they said they were going to do when they first came in, just throw all the players under the bus. Just come out and say, all the players are crap. This is why this team, like Lampard was doing it early in the season, and I love it. He started doing it, he got to Chelsea. Like, what do you expect me to do with all these? The load of crap. And if they've been crap for years, they're crap now, and I can't do anything about it. And you're there going, I mean, if it wasn't your job to do something about it.
I was about to say, what a way to talk yourself out of employment, as and when that happens.
Absolutely. So
I just think, though, like, obviously, like we're saying about the bookies, like odds and stuff, but I just think if either Leicester or Leeds go ahead, and then if Bournemouth were to sneak one, if there's a ground, I'll get restless really, really quick. It's Goodison, isn't it?
You're planning a big Sunday, aren't you?
Cam's going to Southampton, and what he's actually planning is a big Sunday on his way home. That's what he's actually planning. Listen, thank you very much. You've been listening to Tour Live this week's podcast, or watching it indeed as a live. Thanks to Chris, Marianne, Claire, all the way through. Andy for producing. We've had Dan, we've had Cam, and we've had Paul. Whatever you're doing on this Bank Mini Retirement Weekend, enjoy it.
Sports Social Podcast Network.